Mornings are better with a warm beverage, even for Latter-day Saints. Meet Postum, the ideal coffee alternative and proud sponsor of This Week in Mormons podcast. Spot it on the coffee aisle at Smith's Grocery or at your local nearby store. Can't locate it? No worries. Order it at Postum.com. Explore delicious recipes to tailor your Postum experience. Start your day off right with Postum.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world right now, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Mormons, the International Edition. My name is Georgia Travers, and I'm joined here by...
By Daniel Yanez. And...
And Daniel Ferreira. How are you doing today? I hope you're having great, great fun. We would like to thank Postum, our proud sponsor, for this wonderful beverage. I hope you all have the chance to try it. We've got two versions, so you should enjoy the hot cocoa or the Postum traditional flavor. Look it in your favorite store, and if you don't have a favorite store where to find it, then you can buy it online. So I hope you get the chance to taste this wonderful beverage.
A perfect option for one of these, the last few cold days, I guess, of the season. So Postum, really grateful for its sponsorship.
Yeah, spring is coming. So here in the UK, we have our spring forward tonight. We're going to lose an hour of sleep and we're going to, our clocks are going to change. So our evenings are about to get really, really long. Daniel, you don't sound very happy about that.
I mean, I love it. I it's a trade-off, right? We lose an hour of sleep. That's what I was like, about. But I'm actually looking forward to the longer evenings. I love this time of the year. I think it's too short. Well, it's 7 months here in the UK, give or take, of summer time, and looking forward to it. But yeah, tomorrow I need to be early at church for ushering. So if you're listening to this on a Sunday, we're recording on a Saturday, and yeah, just not looking forward to losing 1 hour of sleep. But oh well.
But again, I mean, you get to enjoy the day more, I guess. I mean, from my perspective, I have younger kids, and then it's just annoying because they don't want to go to bed because it's 7:30 and still there's some light. So we were keeping this tradition to put them to bed earlier so they can get a good amount of sleep. But then it's just challenging because of it. But at the same time, you just enjoy the longer days where you can actually get to enjoy the outside and the sunlight for longer periods of time. So I think it's just, you know, there's always a trade-off between these things. So,
yeah, I absolutely hate winter in the UK. It gets dark at 4 p.m., maybe even before. But then we reap the benefits in summer because our longest day, it doesn't get dark until almost 10 p.m. So it's amazing in summer, not so much in winter. But hey, this weekend is pretty significant for Christians around the world because it's Easter weekend. So we've got one hour of church as well. I actually wanted to ask you what you think about this 1 hour church, because for me, I love it. I've got three small children. My twins are not old enough to go to nursery yet. So I have them for the second hour. They're 15 months at the moment. So I've got 3 months and counting before they go to nursery. So 1 hour to me sounds absolutely brilliant because I'm not having to wrangle them through 2 hours of church. But what do you two think about 1 hour church on Easter Sunday?
I mean, it puts on a higher position, you know, the celebration itself. I mean, it's a good opportunity as a family unit, as the church has been, you know, encouraging consistently the last years, right? And then it gives you the chance, you know, to teach your children or to talk about it or to have, you know, a family tradition that is centered on Easter or Christmas, right? But within the boundaries of your family. So church will not absorb, right, much of the family time to do it, right? And something interesting I think about it is also the fact that you get to do a special, you know, meeting where you can, you know, find special speakers or, you know, maybe some musical numbers. So I think the whole spiritual experience, but also the regular Sunday experience is like enhanced by this hour, because then you trust that once it's done, then you get home and then you do your own family traditions at home after church. So I think it's just great. And we come from a tradition of 3 hours. So even having 2 hours at church now is just a good thing to happen.
Yeah, so. I mean, for me, as someone who didn't grow up in the church, having 3 hours of church felt very, very foreign. 1 hour was more normal to me. I think the 2 hours is okay. I have been pondering it, though. I'm wondering if maybe it would be better to have an optional second hour and to just have the sacrament portion of the meeting be compulsory. But hey, that's just my own opinion. But I like it that for Easter Sunday, we've got 1 hour. We can make it very special. I hope that we do more as Latter-day Saints. I hope our understanding of Easter and the way that we practice Easter can evolve over time, and we can end up celebrating it more like we celebrate Christmas, where we can be thinking about it. I love it that in some faith traditions, they have Lent, where they have, you know, the 40 days before Easter, they are building up to Easter and thinking about it more. But certainly even just Holy Week, you know, there are things that happen almost every day during Holy Week where we can think about the Savior and think about what he would have been doing on those days. So I hope that we can do that more. A couple of years ago, actually, I was in Israel during Holy Week in Jerusalem, and it was absolutely fascinating to see how other Christians celebrate this week. It's a really interesting time.
So I think it's just, you know, as you said before, this is an evolving process, and I think just by having this special Sunday for Easter and Christmas is just signaling us what's really important, right? That we have to remember what are we trying to have as a symbol, right? As a Christian faith, and sometimes we're just lost in the process of either the egg hunt or the gifts, right? And Father Christmas or whatever you call him. So I think it's definitely an ongoing process, and I love at least that I get the chance to share and interact with my kids about this tradition and try to, you know, build this experience for them and try to teach them in more depth what we're talking about here. So
yeah, and like speaking that. Of teaching children, so with my four-year-old this week, I asked her if she knew what Easter was, and she said, yes, it's when Jesus died. And I said, well, yeah, it's when Jesus died, but did you know that Jesus was also resurrected at Easter? And that's why we celebrate Easter. And I explained what the resurrection was. And I said, you can be born again, and all of us, because, you know, Jesus died and he was resurrected. One day we will all be resurrected as well, and we will be born again. And a massive smile spread across her face. And she said, oh, does that mean that I get to go in the pram and I get to have bottles and dummies again? And I said, oh, no, it doesn't mean that you're going to be born again and be a baby again. It just means that you're going to get to live again after you die. So I had to try and explain that to her. But I love it that that's what she went to. And she sees her little brother and sister, and they've got, you know, their bottles. They get to go in the pram. She wanted to do that again. But I had to explain to her that the resurrection is slightly different from that.
I mean, I don't blame her. That would be very fun.
Yeah, imagine being a baby, but with an adult after mind. Them.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah,
I will volunteer for that at this point in my life. Yes, I guess. Yes, it's
yeah, just to be taken care of completely. Yes. You know, to not have to worry about anything. But I love how children understand things. And I don't know, have either of you seen the TV series The Chosen? Have you watched that at all?
I haven't had the chance yet.
I have.
Go on, Daniel.
Go ahead, Georgia. No, you're first.
Oh, I was just going to say, it is so good. So I've recently got a new calling, and the person who's training me just mentioned off the cuff, you know, oh, you should watch The Chosen. And I thought, yeah, I mean, it's Holy Week. I'll tune in. And there was this beautiful episode where Jesus was surrounded by children, and he was teaching them, and he was spending time with them. And I just love that childlike understanding that children have sometimes, where they just take things as they are. They don't try and overcomplicate them or think about them in too much detail. And yeah, I just think that's nice. But sorry, Daniel, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say that I've watched like 1.5 episodes, and I've heard really great things about it. It just hasn't clicked with me from the point of view of I want to keep watching it, but that's completely on me. I've heard really, really good things about the production level and everything. And I know it's even driven some controversy within the kind of Christian world in the U.S. at least, because there are some producers that are members of the church that are involved in the production. Or I don't know. The listeners probably know better than I do about it. But I think there were some episodes where Christ said some things that some non Mormon religious people attributed to be aligned with our understanding of the Savior's role that is not in line with their views. And they were like, oh, you're getting kind of infused by Mormon by theology.
LDS Church. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah. Like, it was a really, you know, not really controversial. I don't know, but it created some fuss. I know that to the point that I don't know if some of the directors or producers had to respond saying, no, like, we're fine. You know, we're friends with everybody here that worships Jesus, and, you know, we're not becoming a Mormon
show.
Trying
to push our agenda, or yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
But even though I haven't watched much, just 1.5 episodes, I think it's great to see something in the 21st century that is well-produced, that is also a little bit expansive. And, you know, with these things, there's always an editorial angle that we cannot escape. Even when a painter paints a scene from the Bible and from Jesus, it goes through the lens of that artist, right? And in this case, the same thing happens with the series. But I think that's not inherently bad. I think it's actually good if we have a diversity of such interpretations. The last thing I'll say about this as a tangent is in the temple, we used to have a number of different videos, right? The endowment presentation. And there were two in the days when I received it, the 1990s videos. Then those changed in the early 2010s, maybe 2012 or so, where we had three live-action videos. And that each one had a different way of being interpreted. Because, yeah, exactly, different actors, different scenery. And I really like that. And I'm looking forward to it being hopefully restored, because the current version of just like a slideshow is not the one that I find the most engaging. Plus, I think it removes a little bit of that, of reminding us, look, there are different ways to look at this. I thought that was something very nice that with the current version, which I believe might be transitory, maybe temporary, we've kind of lost a little bit. But George, I hear you're going to the temple this week. Let us know how it feels. And I think Holy Week is definitely a nice time to turn to the Savior in any way that we can.
Absolutely. And I will definitely let you know, it's been a little while since I went to the temple with having two new babies around. It's been kind of crazy. So I'm definitely looking forward to going. But hey, jump into our news for this week. Before we do so, we just need to remind you that you can become a supporter of This Week in Mormons by subscribing to Patreon, where there is exclusive content and the episodes are released ahead of time. So you get that special early release as well. And it's for as little as just a couple of dollars a month, or pounds, or whatever currency you work in. So we recommend that you do that to subscribe to Patreon. And we'll be putting up some extra content, which will be available after we've recorded this. So we highly recommend that you do that. But let's jump straight into our news for this week. So last week it was covered that Sister Dennis had made some remarks at the general broadcast for Relief Society. Just to remind you what she said, which was controversial, she said there is no other religious organization in the world that I know of that has so broadly given power and authority to women. And the church put that statement out on their Instagram. It blew up. It's got over 17,000 comments. And that was covered last week, that post had been made and that those comments had been made by Sister Dennis and that it was controversial. But what's news for this week is that Sister Dennis has responded. So let me read out what she said. So this was again posted on the Instagram, which I think is significant and which we can get into later. But these are Sister Dennis's words. She said, "Last week I spoke during a worldwide Relief Society broadcast. I want to thank all of you who were a part of that historic gathering. An excerpt taken from my remarks generated responses from thousands of sisters. Thank you for reaching out and taking the time to share your feelings. As we read through the comments, we were moved by some of the experiences you've had. As a member of the General Relief Society presidency, I can assure you that we and our church leaders are listening and learning from the things you have shared with us. We love and pray for you and all our sisters everywhere. Please know we hear you, we need you, and we care." So that's her statement that she put out on Instagram. Gonna open it up to the Daniels before I give my thoughts. What are your thoughts?
Why do you do this to us, George? I want to hear yours first. No, thank you for opening it up. And I know this was covered last week in more detail. I don't remember exactly if if the New York Times article about this was covered in detail. But before jumping to Sister Denise's response, I just want to say about something. I want to say something about the New York Times article or the fact that it reached there. I remember going to school, to university, taking some ethics classes, a business ethics class. And this is not exclusive to that, but something that is common in those classes is kind of the litmus test of when something is ethical or not ethical or, you know, problematic. One measuring stick would be, would you be comfortable doing or saying or making a decision if that decision was exposed in the front cover of the New York Times? And if you felt like you were not comfortable with that popping up on that very visible place, then it was probably a good idea to reconsider either not doing it or thinking about it a bit more. And well, this particular incident following the remarks of Sister Denise in the Relief Society devotional ended up literally kind of ticking that hypothetical scenario that something was said and it was problematic enough that it ended up in the cover. I don't know if in the cover, but at least featured in a full article in the New York Times, which I found to be quite a good article. I think it did a really good job of explaining what happened and bringing voices that made it easier to understand why it was such a big deal. As far as the response from Sister Denise, I have two things to say. One is I think it's very rarely that we see a response from an actively serving general officer or general authority about an ongoing issue, a controversy, especially when that controversy was triggered because of something that leader said. It's very, very rare. I can't remember the last time I heard something like that. I know a couple of years ago there were some remarks by brother Brad Wilcox that were very, very controversial that came out. And if I remember correctly, he might have said something about them. It was not quite an apology, but at least recognizing that things that he said, you know, I can't remember, but there was a response at least. But this is the first time that I see something like that for such a visible thing that was said on a general forum as well. I think the Wilcox incident was some video that leaked from a kind of state conference type or like a state devotional type of setting, not a general Relief Society devotional for the whole world. And the second thing I have to say is that I read it and I appreciated it, and I think it's in the right tone and in the right spirit. But I do wonder whether it is too little too late for the magnitude of what happened. And also, it doesn't quite address what was said. You know, it acknowledges that we are listening to those who were aggrieved in any way by what was said and that found a problem with it, which from what I've seen is largely everyone, like very faithful women mainly in the church, not just people on the margins or on the edges of belief or engagement with church. This is, you know, that has affected a lot of people, at least from what I've been able to see. And I just wonder, is this enough? What should follow up from this? What are we going to hear later on after everything has been read or said or considered? But those are my thoughts. Danny?
I have a couple. The first one, and probably it's kind of a funny one, but poor community manager that decided to put that part of the message in social media. That was very unfortunate, I would say. I mean, you might have highlighted a different, you know, phrase or a different, because the ones that watched it could get it, right? And they could analyze and you know, ponder about it, which is fine, which is great, right? But the community manager at that point that decided to put that particular phrase, it's very unfortunate.
I have thoughts on that, but I'll come back later.
Okay, so that would be the first thing, right? The second thing is I like just the attempt, you know, to recognize that something was off and that there is need to for that to be addressed, right? And understanding that there's a general conference coming next week, right? And where there is a wider spectrum of the members that are going to be participating on it would be an opportunity, I hope, right? Where either the Relief Society presidency or the Quorum of 12 Apostles or the First Presidency are going to talk about this, right? So, and then the third is related to this, you know, kind of bubble where the members of the church are. And that's kind of acknowledging, you know, I mean, I've been a member my whole life, but fortunately for me, I was raised in a different place from Utah, right? And that being said, I've seen other organizations. I was the only member in, I don't know, elementary school, then high school, then college, right? So you get to see that life and experiences, different experiences, can be significant and contributive by not being a member, right? And things can be done differently. And that doesn't mean that they're going to be poorly performed or, you know, in a lower quality. So sometimes as members of the church, we think that being members puts us in a position where because we live the gospel and because we try to, you know, follow the commandments, we're better, right? And as an organization, then we start to think, right? Let's say we take this to all the possible levels. So everything we do is better, is perfect because, right? And definitely, I'm not saying that's okay. It's totally not okay. But what I'm trying to say here is that it's also a bit, you know, simplistic, right? To express those ideas. Again, I would assume my first take is that probably because this leader in the church hasn't been exposed to other organizations, right, where things work differently, and that doesn't necessarily mean that because they work differently they're bad, right, or they're not aligned, right? And again, I cannot voice for women because I have a totally different experience, right? And obviously, I'm not going to, you know, take this chance just to say whatever, right? Because again, even though I can try to be empathetic, I cannot put those shoes. I mean, I will try to fit them, but I'm not able. I'm not capable of fitting those shoes because I've experienced a totally different thing. And I'm just here to hear, and I'm just here to understand, right? And that's my take, at least so far.
Yeah. Well, is it okay if I jump in? So please. I think there was a point that you raised, which I really appreciated, that you spoke about that limited perspective or that limited life experience. So I did a bit of a deep dive into Sister Dennis and who she is. And her parents were faithful members of the church. She grew up as a faithful member of the church. I found an article that said that she actually held family home evening every single morning for her own family, and that her and her husband were in a privileged enough position that for their four children, she was able to stay home and she was able to raise her children rather than having to go for any work that was outside of the home. I find it so hard to navigate all of this. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I don't feel ready. But when those remarks were made, it didn't feel right to me at the time. I think comparisons are so dangerous, especially with a limited perspective, which it sounds like she's got, that limited perspective. The other thing, just as a side note, that I was really fascinated about, as far as my research took me, Sister Dennis has never served as a stake Relief Society president or a ward Relief Society president, but she's on the general Relief Society presidency. I found that interesting. She's been a counselor in a ward Relief Society presidency, and she was a stake Relief Society secretary as well. Not to undermine her church experiences, but just I found that interesting. It was just something that I picked up on. So I suppose there's that there's that point about what is her perspective, what is her understanding of what women are going through. A few things from her comments. First of all, I appreciate that she did make a response. I think that shows something about her character. I find it interesting that it's also on Instagram, that it wasn't it wasn't anything official put out by the church. It was just she chose to respond to the Instagram post, and that her comment got pinned on Instagram as well, which I think is something noteworthy. A few things from her comments. I like it that she said, please know that we hear you we need you and we care. I liked that. I found it hard to swallow when she said that they were moved by the experiences and that that they're listening and learning. She didn't say we're taking action. These are the things we're going to change. I mean, I understand it might. Sorry, a small interlude there. I understand that it isn't necessarily the place or the time for her to say these are all the changes that we're making. But regardless of that, it would have been nice if there was an acknowledgement that or a promise that steps are being taken to change things within the church. There was none of that. But the thing that really got me from this was her wording. In her post, she said, "I can assure you that we and our church leaders are listening." She did not acknowledge herself as a church leader. She said, I can assure you that we and our church leaders. Why did she not say, "I can assure you that we as your church leaders are listening"? Why did she not acknowledge herself as a church leader? She's in the General Relief Society presidency. So that really upset me. But on the other hand, I do acknowledge that she's trying. She's taking a positive step by even making a response. But I've seen it really put out on a lot of social media posts from women this week and last week, that we feel like we're being given breadcrumbs, that we're just given these small things, and you can feast on breadcrumbs all you like, but you're never going to be satisfied from breadcrumbs is what I've seen from a lot of people. And I think at the moment I am sitting in that camp, and I'm trying to navigate this as best I can.
Thanks for sharing that. It's interesting how much of an impact a preposition or a conjunction can have with that phrase that you highlighted, like "we and the rest of our church leaders" could have been a better option. Or because, you know, maybe if we give them the benefit of the doubt, maybe they're thinking from that perspective, or Sister Dennis is thinking like, of course I mean me, you know, as a church leader plus the other church leaders. But word choice is so important, especially on something of like category one, like very top tier of importance at the moment. Is such a critical and touchy subject. So it's really interesting. When I read it, I didn't notice that. And that's probably a little bit of the privilege that I enjoy of not having to be thinking about those things, not nearly as much as others, especially women. But yeah, so listeners that have listened to some of our episodes before, they know that my calling used to be bishop as of just a few weeks. I'm no longer a bishop. I didn't do anything wrong as far as I know, but our ward was actually discontinued. We'll get to that maybe later in the episode, maybe in the Patreon segment. There's lots that we can say about that as well. But I'm mentioning that only because by virtue of having had that colleague up until 2-3 weeks ago, I've still been in touch with many of the people that I served with, and kind of many of the sisters that were in my ward. And I can attest that this is something that has affected the very faithful. You know, this is the first time that I see something of this magnitude affecting the very people that are carrying the work forward. And it's really prompted me, Georgia, as well, to think as a now former bishop and as an active member of the church to see things that I thought I was aware of, and maybe I had a relatively decent awareness of before this incident, but now it's really difficult not to look at anything without paying attention to those things when it comes to the inclusion of and representation of women in the church, even to the point of thinking, well, wait, like, how do we get here, first of all, right? If we go to the scriptures, if we go to our very doctrine, how do we get to this position in which we're teaching these things? And on this, if you will indulge me, I'll just say two things. One is that this message, the kind of the overarching message of what Sister Dennis said, that, you know, in the church, women have authority, you know, priesthood power and all of that, and that leading to say no other institution grants women this much power or authority. And that's a relatively recent messaging that was not what I grew up listening, at least up until the mid 2010s, the main emphasis was on emphasizing that the equivalent of priesthood authority when it came to women was motherhood. And I'm old enough to remember that that was the kind of the primary emphasis, which has its whole other set of complexities and whether that teaching has merit or not, right? And I think there are arguments for and against. But gradually, over the last 10 or so years, the shift has gone towards emphasizing the authority that comes from the priesthood that is shared with everybody, including women in the church, by virtue of being ordained to callings and things like that, and when we serve. And now it seems that that pivot to that, which also has merits on the positive, but also many, many other problematic things, it seems to be stretched. And when subject to scrutiny, neither of those answers seem to hold water very tightly. And that's something that I've had to wrestle with now as well, to realize it just seems that we have really poor answers to this issue and we really need more light and knowledge about this. And it's been very humbling. It's something that I thought I had kind of realized before, but not to the extent that now, after the last few days, after this incident, I've come to see. And I hope, I really genuinely hope that we gradually, you know, in the Lord's due time, we do get that extra light and knowledge, because it's become evident that it's missing, that there are way too many questions that don't have a very good answer, that the answers of the past, you know, the old, how is this teaching from Christ, the old bags of wine, I can remember the name in English, but trying to hold wine with old bags, they break if you put new wine on them. It feels a little bit like that, like the answers of the past are not there to serve the needs of the present and of the future when it comes to women in the church and many other issues, but particularly this one, these last few days. So I hope that we men as well can engage with this issue in a proactive way, in a way that recognizes the privileged position that we have and the difficulties that women face that are just you know, very evident, especially after these last few days.
Totally. And thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on that. I feel like this has been a seismic shift for me. It has been something that has been very, very challenging. And I consider myself someone who is all in, so to speak. I really do. I have given my heart and soul to Jesus Christ over the last 10 years. It's been 10 years since I was baptized into this church. And this has been the first time where I felt really, really challenged in that. I'm going to stay faithful, but I'm not going to lie, it's been hard. And like you said, I'm seeing things with new eyes, with a fresh perspective that I've never seen before. And I'm hoping that I can use that to my advantage to try and drive change and to try and change perspectives and maybe policy within the church. But I'm hopeful, but I have found the last couple of weeks a real challenge. But if it's okay, I think we should move on to our next story. And this is an interesting one. So we're going to jump to something completely different. We're going to get away from church. We're going to jump to David Archuleta. So this week, David Archuleta dropped a brand new song, which he has been teasing for a while. And it's a bombshell, for lack of a better word. So David Archuleta has been producing new music for a while now. And as we know, a couple of years ago, he stepped away from church and his music to this point had been very positive, embracing those changes. This was a very different song. This song was very deep, very powerful, and it's called Held Together. So to read you some of the lyrics from it, it says, "Bow your head, don't be bold, you'll survive by doing what you're told." Potentially a dig at church life there. Then he says, "The more you grow, you know the truth." And then he says, "If I have to live without you, I don't want to live forever in someone else's heaven. So let them close the gates. Oh, if they don't like the way you're made, then they're not any better. If paradise is pressure, oh, we'll go to hell together." Now, very, very deep, moving lyrics there. He cites his mum and her remarks that she made after he came out as gay, and his decision to leave the church. His mum has now also left the church. This is the first time we've really seen from David Archuleta kind of a window into what he's thinking about church at this present time. He'd been fairly silent within his music on a commentary about leaving the church. This is the first time he's really come out with something that is, it to me, it feels quite anti-church, and it feels like there's a lot of hurt there. Maybe he's giving us an insight into the hurt that he feels. What do you think about this?
Yeah. Danny?
I mean, first, yeah, we need to acknowledge that David Archuleta served his mission in Chile, actually. And he served.
Another Chile connection.
Another Chile connection. Yes, Chile being like the triangle of Bermuda or something. But yeah, he served the mission there.
So for listeners who are unaware, the Daniels are from Chile. So yeah, there's the Chilean connection, the link. If this is your first time tuning in.
Yes, yeah. And everything from Chile. Goes I'm to from Chile the UK. For whatever reason. Yes, for whatever reason, everything has a connection to Chile. As within Chile, everything has a connection to Villa Alemana, but that's another story. But what's important here to mention is that, he served a good mission. He shared his talent by singing in many, many church activities and things, and people loved him as a missionary. And what I would like to say is definitely we're seeing an individual that had normal experiences in church. He followed all the steps in the process of a normal member of the church, faithful member in the church, again, connecting his talents to what his spirituality prompted to do, which was, you know, sharing his talents in the church and their, I don't know, DVDs for the Mormon Tabernacle Choir or the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square. As I said before, as a missionary, he also shared his talent extensively, even when he got back home. So my position, and I'm not going to take much time on this, is very straightforward. And is, for whatever reason, people are not in the church anymore. I've learned because it wasn't something that came naturally to me, but I've learned that I need to be respectful of their experience. I shouldn't judge, and especially I repeat myself frequently that I shouldn't judge people's choices, because even myself, I have decided to stay in the church, and people that decide to not stay in the church for whatever reason, I still care about them. They're still, humans that have their own experiences and whichever reason made them choose not to continue worshiping or, you know, keeping their covenants the way I'm trying to keep them, it doesn't mean that they're against me or they're not welcome. So my simple take on this is we've got a person that became a very relevant person in the LDS culture because of his talents. He became a very publicly acknowledged or publicly, yeah, you know, popular, yeah, person.
A celebrity, right?
A celebrity, right? Basically a celebrity. And then he's a talented guy. I mean, no one can deny that he has a huge talent, right? And of course, for some people it would be sad to think that he's not, you know, in this flock, right? In the flock of the church active members. But that doesn't mean that makes him the enemy. And that's my statement so far, that no matter what your choices in life, we're all loved children of God. And then we all deserve respect. And no one should judge others because of their choices. Because humans are not black or white. We're all degrees of shade. And we're all striving to become better, hopefully, and either is in the covenant path terms or in your own terms. But I honor and value everyone's journey in this life. And life is complex. So, I mean, it's up to you what's better for your own needs and what you think is, you know, significant and contributive to your life on earth.
Yeah, similar for me. I have way too many things to say, and I'm going to try to stay organized. So please help me. But I've seen a lot of, I know that social media is not a true reflection of who we are or who either current or former members are, right? It's an echo chamber that tends to amplify probably the worst of us for the most part, and rarely the best of us. And the amount of hate that I've seen targeted towards David Archuleta as a result of this song has been really disappointing. I think we need to do better. If any of us considers oneself an aspiring disciple of Jesus Christ by being members of this church and are acting in any way antagonistically to somebody that, as you said, Georgia, I also take this song as an expression of hurt, right? Regardless of where it comes from or why it happened, it is an expression of deep hurt because of his experience at church. We need to do better. Like, generally, people in Twitter, people in Instagram, people in whatever you are that are posting hate towards David Archuleta, please stop it. Please do. And I personally take responsibility for what I'm saying now, not these wicked Mormons. Please stop it. That's nonsense. And that's not warranted at all. And I say that as somebody that is not particularly a fan of his music. You know, I have a very different musical taste, you know, very, very different church experience from what I can see. But that needs to stop. I think a year ago was that President Nelson gave that talk about peacemakers needed. And we just need to reflect that a little bit more. I think that as a musician myself, and as somebody that tries to convey feelings and thoughts and ideas and part of me, of who I am through music and through lyrics, I listened to it and it was impossible to look the other way and say, oh, this is just, you know, he's being anti-church or he's being this or that. It was a genuine expression of something that has been traumatic and really hurtful, but also with a really hopeful tone. And I hope we are able to acknowledge that as well. I think that the song, from what the interviews he's given, or at least the articles that I saw, was written about his experience with his mom. And you mentioned that, Georgia, as well, about the response of his mom towards him when he decides to leave church, and kind of that recognition that it was, may I say this, it was what Adam and Eve faced in the Garden of Eden. At one point, Eve partook of the fruit. The consequence was to leave the presence of God. And what did Adam do? Adam stayed with Eve. So this is, in a way, a bit of an Adamic or an Eve or like Edenic conundrum and decision that he had to face. And with the complexity of everything related to gender, to sexuality, sexual orientation, and all of that, where, again, it's one of those other areas where we're coming to realize that we know way less than we think we do. I hope we're able to recognize those patterns and we're able to grant them that merit and that grace that they probably deserve. The last thing I'll say to close is another element of self-criticism. I've been very self-critical today with our church, and it's that it didn't have to be this way. Like, I think that this song is a reflection that process of him coming out and leaving church was tremendously painful, and that doesn't have to be that way. I think that we're tremendously ill-equipped as a church community. And I think some wards, areas or countries or, you know, states might be better equipped than others, but on average, we're really poorly equipped to deal with people that decide to step away. And that really needs to change, because it's happening a lot and it breaks families and it breaks relationships. And we cannot have it both ways. When David Archuleta was active for over a decade, both the church organization, you know, kind of capital C church, also lowercase C church, you know, at the local level, everybody benefited from that, from his celebrity, for his openness to include the church and the gospel and Jesus in his art. And now that he decides to step away, we just shun him like that. I find that unacceptable, and I hope we do better. And I certainly commit myself to do a bit better and to be a bit more gracious and to remind myself that it didn't have to be this way if we would have done a little bit better as a church when dealing with somebody going through that. Mic drop.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. And, you know, David Archuleta has given us this insight into his soul and into what he's thinking and what he's feeling. And I think it is so important to be true to ourselves and to be authentic. And I hope he finds happiness, and I hope he finds everything that he wants in being true to himself. I can't imagine what it must be like to be in his shoes. I've got so many friends. Some of my closest friends are from the LGBTQ plus community, and I'm continually looking for ways for me to understand them a little bit better, because it's not an experience that I've lived through, but I hope that we can treat these people with compassion, and that we can do more, and that we can do better. And I suppose that just goes along with everything that's already been said today. But we, David Archuleta, if you're listening to This Week in Mormons, we wish you the best. And we hope that you, you know, find happiness on this new path. But let's move on. Let's go to our next news story for today. So we are rapidly running out of time. So we're going to jump to an interesting one. Let's get a bit of international news in. So let's jump to a new branch has been created in Togo in a town as requested by their king. That's an interesting one. Daniel Yanez, do you know more about this?
Yeah, this is from the Church News, from the Africa newsroom, which is great, by the way. I recommend everybody to check it out every now and then. There's so much going on in the continent of Africa that seems to be completely out of sync with what's going on in other areas of the church. It's growing exponentially, new wards and branches opening, continuously, new temples being announced, and it's delightful to see. Something that came up this week is what you mentioned. So in Togo, there was a branch of the church that was doing some of the Light the World initiatives for Christmas. And they decided, they felt prompted to go and do a donation of food and other goods to a nearby town, a nearby city that the church was not there from, for what I could read. And when they did that, the king of the tribe that lives there found out. He was like, wow, this church is cool. And they were in contact, and the king said that no church had ever done that had not been established there already, kind of like an outside church, just going and freely giving something. And he told them, I want you guys to establish a congregation here. So fast forward, and now a new branch is being established there with the blessing of the king of this community. I'm trying to pull the name because I closed the tab, unfortunately, but I found that to be really, really cool that, those relationships are being fostered at a very, very local but very meaningful level. Yeah, it's the King Tobe Agokoli IV. That's his name, of the Notse community in Togo.
I would like to add something else, Danny, and it's the fact that there was a returned missionary couple that, for work purposes, had to move to that location. So they were the ones that also were, helping around to the organization of this new branch in the church. So I think it's just great as well. As you said, we don't know much about what's happening in Africa, but it's definitely a thriving community of followers of Jesus Christ. And I think it's just great to see that also, the community is welcoming and it's accepting the church as an organization that is, able to open their doors for help, but also for the people around there to worship.
And this was just organized last week on the 24th of March. It says the Notse branch of the church was organized. Attending the historic meeting was the king special representative who helped make the branch creation possible. So imagine having a representative of a king in your first meeting.
In your branch. Well, it's so good to hear some positive news about church growth, because certainly from my position, it feels like the church, and I could be wrong here, but it feels like our numbers are dwindling here in the UK. So as we mentioned earlier, Daniel Yanez and I, we were in the same ward, but at the beginning of March, our ward was disbanded and Daniel has been placed in one ward, and I've been placed in another ward. So we're no longer in the same ward as each other, which is really sad. And I guess it's just nice to see that the church is growing in some areas, because it feels like we're having wards that are being disbanded in our area, and that people aren't as interested in church as they used to be, perhaps. And maybe that's a grand assumption, but that's certainly the way that it feels from my perspective. So what would you say about that, Daniel?
Yeah, I think that, I've gone through this process a couple of times in my life. I think I commented on it a little bit on previous episodes on my Chile experience, but this UK experience of going through a war, discontinuation, has been quite interesting. But this particular ward, you know, or former ward, was mainly affected by people moving out. So the area where we live became increasingly more expensive, and less younger families stayed, and they're moving further north in the UK, where it's less expensive, where people can afford homes more easily, and things like that. And with COVID, that also affected the inflow of new families in this area. A lot of families from abroad used to move in. I was one of them, and they would usually stay a few years and then go. But you had a constant inflow, replenishing that population that was kind of stopped over the last 2-3 years after the pandemic. And I think that has been the main driver in this area. But overall, even though that is the explanation for our ward largely, there's an aging population in church. There's not that many people within church replenishing the rest. And then we have the factor that people step out of church as well. Some people disengage. And these ward boundary changes have also the added implication that when this happens, some people decide to disengage. You know, they sometimes can be a trigger for people to say, you know what, now it's too far away, or you know what, I've lost my community, and it's very difficult now to feel at home at church, and it is a challenge. So my prayers go to the new leaders in these new wards that have been set up, so that they can kind of preserve that community. And I know that the UK is not the only place that's going through that. Many places in California or other kind of places that where the church has been very strong historically have seen a migration of people away from those more expensive states further into the mountains, into the Mountain West or other areas in the US, and all of those demographic shifts, regardless of whether people are leaving the church or not, you know, that creates the scenario for many wards and stakes to be merged and discontinued, and that can be always a bit tricky. When I was younger and I was a young man, it was always great. It was like, oh, we're getting more people. And that's all I could see. But as an adult, I've seen firsthand the last few weeks how difficult it can be for many. And I agree with you, Georgia. It's refreshing to see that in other areas of the world, they're seeing boundary changes, but because they're growing, and that's really cool.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting that you say you've been through this before. So this is the first time that it's happened to me. At first, I think I just went into survival mode. So I don't think I've mentioned it before. I was serving. So Daniel was the bishop of the ward. I was the ward relief society president. So Daniel and I were working incredibly closely together. We went into survival mode when we heard this was what was happening. We made sure everyone was taken care of, that people knew where they were going, that we had, you know, planned an appropriate ending for our ward, etc. And now the dust has settled. I'm in a new ward. I am struggling. I'm finding it really hard. So in our beautiful St. Albans ward, which we were a part of, we were getting maybe 60 to 80 people per week. Would that be correct, Daniel? On average, maybe a few more.
70 to 85. Yeah, because we had about five on average on Zoom. But yeah.
Sure.
A good Sunday was 90.
And yeah, I knew every single person. I felt like we had a good mix of young and old, and we were a family. And now I'm in my new ward. The first week there were over 250 people there. It was absolutely crazy. So what they've done is they've taken two wards, which weren't my old ward, and they've put them together, and then they've added a few people from my ward, of which my family are some of those people. So essentially we've got a combination of three wards now meeting as one ward. I think last week there were 190 people there. It's just impossible to get to know everyone. At the moment, it's just impossible for it to feel like a family. I mean, we've got a wonderful leadership. We have everything I've heard about the bishop is amazing. I know the Relief Society president. She's lovely. So I do have faith that things will be okay. But as the dust is settling, it is feeling unsettling to me. But what's your new ward like, Daniel?
It's we had a bit of a different situation. Our side of the former St. Albans ward, which by the way had been a ward since 1849, like, it's a really old unit of the church that I just closed here in the UK, a historic unit. But yeah, my side of the ward joined the Watford ward, which was already an established unit, so it was not like in your case, that were two words that were discontinued, plus this corner of our former word merged into one. So it's been a nice experience because this word knew for about 2 weeks that we were coming, and they really, really prepared to welcome us. And from day one, walking into the building, you could see all of the little things that they had thought of to make us feel welcome, like having name tags for everybody to write their name on and stick them. They had a map of the new boundaries, many things like that. That I'm forgetting a few others, but from the moment I walked in, I felt welcome. And that was really, really, really nice. So it still takes time to figure things out. But I think they've done a really good job of integrating us relatively quickly.
So, Daniel, you just dropped out for a few moments there, but we caught some of what you said. Oh. But Daniel Ferreira, you were speaking as well.
Yeah. I was telling that any change in terms of your church attendance is something weird. If you go to a new ward or the boundaries are changed, anything that has to deal with people changing or you having to deal with changing the faces you got to love because you got to serve and work and know, it's always very, very challenging. And yeah, I think for you, whichever experience, either going to a smaller unit or a bigger unit, is just the change of not going to, again, the building you used to love and care because you had to clean it every now and then, because the people you got to serve with, it's just always a challenge. And there's also, you know, a leak of people that won't stand the change, won't stand, you know, this whole situation of not seeing these people that they grow all together or grow loving because of, you know, all these experiences together, right? And yeah, definitely words or buildings or you know, units or families. And whether we were aware of it, sometimes that can be problematic too. But what I'm saying is that from a silver lining, it's your family. And then you want to see them every Sunday, and you want to see them in other activities as well. So we're running out of time, I think, here at this point. We've been having a wonderful session, but it's definitely been very short for us. I think we had lots to talk and lots to say. So I don't know if we're going to cover one last news article and then we call it quits. I don't know.
Yeah, Georgia, absolutely.
Would you like to? Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I can talk us through the next one. So just to close today, let's quickly speak about this family name assist feature. So this is just a quick, interesting one here. So there is a new feature, as far as I'm aware, which allows church leaders on Leader and Clark resources to submit names to the temple and to get temple cards printed for ordinances, even if the family tree is not on Family Search. So I think I've understood that situation correctly. So what this is going to do is it's going to allow us to take names to the temple in a simplified way. So it means that you've not got to do the research beforehand, is as far as I understand it. So I think this has implications in terms of new members and in terms of people whose genealogy may be a bit complicated. I think it's if you know of someone who has passed away and you would like to take their name from your family, that leaders now have access to be able to put those names into a system where they can get the temple cards printed and they can do those ordinances. So a really fascinating one there that's come out for this week.
Yeah, I got to admit that I struggle a little bit with understanding what the feature was because I'm not super familiar with Family Search, and I'm a little bit embarrassed to acknowledge it. I mean, as a former bishop, I encourage members to engage in the work of redeeming the dead and going to the temple, but I just never had a lot of time to do that myself. And as the son of parents that did many, many generations in my family, I've never had to do it myself a lot. And I'm looking forward to the day when I have the time and also the bandwidth to embark on it. So when I read through it, I was like, oh, maybe I thought we could do this before. But anyway, by reading it and seeing that it will make things more accessible for people, I'm really happy with that. I think that with temples becoming so ubiquitous and accessible for people over the next few years, when the backlog of like 200 that we have to build are built, I think the more access we provide to people, the better, and the more meaningful the experience would be for them if they're doing it for relatives and then family that they know, rather than going and doing it for other children of God that also need them, but that they don't have a personal relationship with those first times at least. So really cool. Exciting to see the product managers there at church working through these things.
Yeah, and I think having those new features and keeping it fresh is always a good perspective. But hey, we're out of time for today. We encourage feedback, so we encourage you to email us on contact@thisweekinmormons.com. We would love to know what you think about us as internationals and giving maybe a slightly different perspective on things. So we'd love to hear your feedback. As always, yeah. We hugely encourage you to subscribe to Patreon for additional content. And other than that, we hope to see you again. These new stories are interesting. We're going to keep them coming to you every week. So take care and goodbye for now.
We'll see you soon. Bye.
Take care. Bye. See you. Bye.